Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
Good evening, everyone. If you enjoy our show and find our research both interesting and informative, please can I ask that you consider leaving us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does help us out a huge amount. You can also find out more about us and our work by heading over to deadsouls.co.uk and checking us out. We are a small team of 3 researchers with more than 70 years of experience between us. You can also find us and speak to us over on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Social Club and we'll come up. So, as always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Are You a Psychopath? I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. When someone says to you the word psychopath, no doubt there are a series of names and historical people that come to mind. Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Charles Manson, Ted Bundy, Ed Gein, Richard Ramirez, John Wayne Gacy, Harold Shipman, and Peter Sutcliffe, to name a few. I could go on and on. But whether these people were actually psychopathic, of course, remains hotly debated for most of them, given how they were never officially assessed and diagnosed. Although their attributes and behavioural traits may certainly indicate so. You see, for the most part, psychopaths are only diagnosed following assessment in the aftermath of serious crimes being committed. It's not something that you can pop along to your family doctor and get assessed for on a Tuesday morning appointment. But with that in mind, it becomes self-explanatory as to why we only ever seem to learn about psychopaths after the fact. And I suppose that we all like to think that people and their behaviours are gradually getting worse over time. You'll often hear people say that things weren't as bad as they are now, years ago. The murders, rapes, paedophiles and other awful crimes, they are awful now, but they didn't used to be in my day. But crimes aren't getting any worse, the data tells us. Crimes committed 50 or 100 years ago were just as horrific and just as frequent as they are now. It's only that we hear about them significantly more now with the advent of the internet and 24-hour news media. In fact, psychopaths in particular have actually been with us from the very beginning of time. It's psychopaths that I'm going to talk to you about tonight. If you're a Christian, you may know that according to the Bible, it was the third human who existed that murdered the fourth human that ever existed. So we were off with a bang from the very start, it seems. Additionally, Theophrasty, who was one of Aristotle's students, well, he very well may have been one of the first people, if not the first person in history, to ever talk openly about psychopaths. He referred to them as the unscrupulous people. Some examples of psychopaths in literature throughout history include Medea from Greek mythology, King Lear in the book of the 1001 Nights, Richard III and Titus Andronicus from Shakespeare, Alex Large from A Clockwork Orange, and Hannibal Lecter from Thomas Harris's Silence of the Lambs. The word psychopathy comes from joining the Greek words psyche, meaning soul of the mind, and pathos, meaning suffering feeling of disease. The word was first used in Germany back in 1847, where it appeared as psychopastiche, with a specific term, quote-unquote, psychopath, being specifically traced to 1885. Psychopaths are individuals without any kind of conscience or empathy. The term psychopathic originated with descriptors, which included a diverse range of dysfunctional and antisocial behaviours and mental and sexual deviances, including at the time, homosexuality. It was first described in a psychiatric setting by one of psychiatry's founding fathers, the French physician Philippe Pinel. He referred to it as mania sans délire, which means insanity without delirium. And people suffering from this, he stated, were described as having certain behavioural deficits. Deficits such as displaying antisocial acts, drug and alcohol abuse, being willfully cruel, irresponsible and immoral. He also believed that the difference between these individuals and the rest of society was that they suffered from what he called an absence of confusion in the intellect. But the word psychopath as we know it today came from, as I stated, a German psychiatrist by the name of J.L.A. Koch. It was he that actually called it psychopastiche and believed that it was the constitution of a person at birth that created this condition. But in the early 20th century, the word psychopath evolved to be used to describe anybody with any kind of shyness or insecure behaviour. It was sort of like a placeholder term for anybody that wasn't completely quote-unquote normal. Used in a similar sense to the word hysteria, which was applied to pretty much anything women did that men felt was abnormal at the time. But the term psychopathy actually became somewhat more codified in 1941 with the release of the book titled The Mask of Sanity by American-born Dr. Hervey M. Cleckley. The mask in the title refers to the projection of normalcy that psychopaths can project out there. The book was a sort of seminal work on the subject, and it was based on a wide variety of studies on psychopaths that were at large in the world at the time. In fact, now, 50 years on, it's still considered one of the most influential works on the subject. But the first person to research and compose a test to determine whether or not somebody was a psychopath was the Canadian forensic psychologist Dr. Robert Hare in 1980. The test is known as the Hare test by psychology students and professionals. It includes 20 different personality traits that can indicate whether or not somebody is a psychopath. And whilst it may seem generalist in approach, it has proven to be stunningly accurate. If you were wondering what those 20 traits are, and if you wanted a check to make sure that you don't fall into any of the categories identified, or maybe even your partner or suspiciously sour mother-in-law, well, here they are. Demonstrating glibness or superficial charm. Having a grandiose sense of self-worth. Having the need for stimulation and being regularly prone to boredom. Being a pathological liar. Regularly conning and manipulating other people. Having a lack of remorse or guilt. Having a shallow affect. Displaying callousness and lack of empathy. Having a parasitic lifestyle. Displaying poor behavioural controls. Displaying promiscuous sexual behaviour. Having early onset behavioural problems. Displaying a lack of realistic and long-term goals. Showing impulsivity. Displaying a failure to accept responsibility for one's own actions. Having many short-term marital relationships. Evidence of juvenile delinquency. The revocation of conditional release, and displaying criminal and moral versatility. So yeah, if you were listening to this, and the preceding list is making you think, hot damn, that's describing my boyfriend down to a T, you might want to consider getting the hell out of there. By the way, here's a fun fact about psychopaths. They are hard-coded to like bitter taste in foods, something that makes you question our individuality right there. Dark chocolate, coffee without milk or cream, dark leafy greens like kale and arugula or rocket outside of the US, and citrus fruits. Psychopaths love them. Horseradish, mustard and wasabi too. In a study published in the journal called Appetite in 2016, research provided evidence that, quote,
participants confirmed the hypothesis that bitter taste preferences are positively associated with malevolent personality traits. This is evidenced with the most robust relation to everyday sadism and psychopathy.
It was the overall strongest predictor compared to other taste preferences, the research showed. And the participants who didn't like bitter taste tended to be more agreeable, cooperative, and sympathetic. It's thought that they prefer bitter taste because they have this hardwired need for stimulation. And that's something that's prevalent among psychopaths, is that their senses and their emotions are somewhat dulled. Thus, they are always seeking stronger and stronger stimulations and engaging in risky behaviours to satisfy their inner need and desires. Sometimes the craving to satisfy said desires are so strong that they are unable to ignore them. We can't avoid the fact, especially while discussing this subject, that to a psychopath, one of the things that are thrilling enough to satisfy those inner desires can be hurting other people, be it physically or emotionally. But not all psychopaths are like Patrick Bateman. Not all will harm others. Many operate in society and manage to get by without negatively impacting others. So what exactly causes someone to be a psychopath? Well, there has been some research that suggests that there's reduced brain activity in certain parts of the brain that have to do with emotion and decision-making in psychopathic individuals, such as in the amygdala, the area of the human brain which processes fear. This means that during studies, they showed less activity and blood flow in those regions of the brain where they were showed images of people in distress, or when they had to face the consequences of their own actions. But this raises an important question, because we know about neuroplasticity in the human brain. We know that our behaviours and our core thinking patterns can actually change the way that our brains are shaped. So the question raised is this: is it the shape of our brains that causes us to be psychopaths? Or is it the fact that we are psychopaths that causes this structure in our brains? One way to answer this is to look at identical twins and adopted children. Those studies suggest that unemotional, psychotic behavior and thought patterns actually do have a genetic component to them, that those genes have more of an influence on someone than antisocial behavior itself. Then, when it comes to adopted children, well, those genes seem to be able to be counteracted by environmental and parental influences too, research shows. Some research from the renowned Nashville-based Vanderbilt University suggests that psychopaths are hardwired to seek reward at any cost. Individuals with psychopathic traits display a hyperreactive dopamine reward system that works to amplify their behaviours. Now, if by this point you were wondering what the difference is between a psychopath and a sociopath, well, they're both considered antisocial personality disorders, but there are a few little yet notable differences. A sociopath disregards society's laws, morals, orders and values and demonstrates purely selfish interests. But they don't go out with the intent to hurt others. They just want to do what pleases them with complete ignorance to everyone else. A psychopath, in comparison, disregards humanity entirely and intentionally chooses to hurt others. They deliberately make plans to use others in a way that satisfies their personal goals. To them, people are nothing more than just objects, a means to gaining what they want and no different than any other inanimate object. One simple way of looking at the difference is that a sociopath is in basic terms just unrestrained, whereas a psychopath is premeditative. One is ignorant, the other is callous. So hearing those traits might give you the impression that all psychopaths are dangerous. This actually isn't true, as I touched upon earlier. There is a likelihood that some of you listening to this have actually worked for a psychopath, be it currently or in the past. This is because of their narcissistic tendencies. Psychopathic individuals are naturally attracted to higher positions of power, such as CEOs or politicians. Take Al Dunlap, the infamously destructive CEO of Scott Paper and Sunbeam. He so reveled in firing people that he dubbed himself Chainsaw Al and even titled his autobiography, quote-unquote, Mean Business. The double meaning was very intentional. Despite his reputation, two separate boards actually hired him. Then there is Elizabeth Holmes, whose intimidation of one of her former employees actually helped drive that person to suicide. Yes, you can make the argument that politics is dangerous, but when you think about a psychopath, you think Patrick Bateman. You don't think politicians. They hardly spring to mind. Well, almost hardly. In October 2024, a letter signed by more than 200 psychologists, psychiatrists, and mental health professionals warned that Donald Trump is dangerous to the presidency. This was because, they said, quote,
Donald Trump demonstrates symptoms of a severe, untreatable personality disorder, malignant narcissism, and potentially psychopathic and sociopathic traits, which makes him grossly unfit for leadership.
The letter was published in a full-page advertisement in the New York Times, paid for by the letter's signatories, who had formed the Anti-Psychopath PAC, a political action committee, who stated that Trump was an existential threat to democracy. The letter continued, quote,
Even a non-clinician can see that Trump shows a lifetime pattern of failure to conform to social norms and laws, repeated lying, reckless disregard for the safety of others, irritability, impulsivity, irresponsibility, and lack of remorse.
Now, the American Psychiatric Association states that it is entirely unethical to diagnose individuals whom a psychiatrist has not personally assessed. This is known in the United States as the Goldwater Rule, named after Barry Goldwater, a former U.S. senator and 1964 Republican presidential candidate. He was called psychotic, schizophrenic, and compared to Hitler, Castro, and Stalin by psychiatrists who had responded to a survey in Fact magazine during his presidential run. This, in turn, led to a messy court battle, and Senator Goldwater successfully sued Fact magazine for libel in 1968. Goldwater was ultimately awarded $75,000 for the libel verdict. So, have any of the signatories of this letter in 2024 clinically assessed Donald Trump? No, none. But the letter does address the Goldwater rule directly. It states that since it was adopted back in 1973, quote,
The field has modernized the DSM diagnostic system, which relies exclusively on observable behavioral criteria. For many years, we've all observed thousands of hours of Trump's behavior, reinforced by the observations of dozens of individuals who have interacted with Trump personally.
The same professionals also argue that the disorder, which they all agree that Trump suffers from, quote,
makes him deceitful, destructive, deluded, and extremely dangerous to democracy in America.
I thought I would add this nugget to the story, given my reference to high-profile politicians, and this name likely being one of the first that pops to mind. But other examples of high-functioning psychopaths include Bernie Madoff, Charles Ponzi, Jordan Belfort, Frank Abagnale Jr., Andy McNab, Neil Armstrong, James Fallon, and Chuck Yeager. Which begs the question, how do you know if you are dealing with a psychopath? Well, here are some traits that you can look out for. Overconfidence, insincerity, irresponsibleness, selfishness, doesn't understand metaphors or abstract ideas, but specializes in logic and reason, shallow emotions, an uncaring attitude, that they have a parasitic lifestyle, and they demonstrate chaotic behaviors, or has a high threshold for disgust, and doesn't look at a person's eyes when that person is having an emotional moment. Of course, you might hear that list and think that some of those traits apply to you. Does that mean you're a psychopath? Well, no, not necessarily. Well, not unless, of course, you are a psychopath. But seriously, when testing the kinds of traits for psychopathy, it's not just about the traits themselves. It's about more the intention behind those traits. Such as like where somebody might have a little bit of narcissism or overconfidence, but that doesn't necessarily make them a psychopath. One or two of those traits might appear in large proportions of the population, but a confirmed psychopath would have to display almost, if not all of those traits, in large measure over a prolonged period of time. It may take months or even years to assess, which is why psychopathic assessments generally take place for criminals in the prison system. All that aside, and although, you might actually be a psychopath. 1 or 2% of the population actually are. Do you use other people for your own benefit and not have any empathy for those people? This is a pretty good starter in identification. So is there any hope for somebody who is a psychopath? Can we change or treat them in any way? And can you change yourself and your behaviors if you were a psychopath? Or are you destined to hurt other people for the rest of your life? The answers to each of these questions is fairly complicated. There are some studies being conducted at the Mendota Juvenile Treatment Center in Madison, Wisconsin, that might give you a little bit of hope for the psychopathically inflicted. Nearly all of the children at the Mendota Treatment Center are positively tested as severe for potential psychopathy as adults. Psychopaths rarely give any kind of consideration to punishment, and in fact, punishment tends to only harden their criminality, and psychopaths are 6 times more likely to commit more crimes after they're released from prison. So, the Mendota Center decided to not focus on punishment. They instead focused on positive reinforcement and rehabilitation, something that is fairly unique in the American prison system and more of a European trait. At Mendota, they call it the decompression model. Within the decompression model, signs of positive behavior, no matter how big or small, were reinforced with a reward, something like chocolate bars or computer games. Thus, the more good behavior will equate to bigger rewards. Did it work? Well, they studied 300 participants that were in the Mendota Treatment Center, and then some that were treated in other facilities with different models. Of those, after a 5-year study, only 64% of the Mendota Treatment Center prisoners were arrested for reoffending, compared to 98% of the non-treated youth. That's a 34% reduction in recidivism. The Mendota Center inmates were 50% less likely to commit a violent crime, and the inmates didn't commit any further homicides, which is compared to the non-treatment center inmates who killed 16 people following their release. Yikes. So it certainly appears that there is a lot of importance and a lot of weight to identify in these traits in individuals when they are young and in a position to be taught the tools to be able to work through their issues as they get older. There is a lot of misinformation out there about psychopathy. Just because a person is defined as a psychopath does not necessarily mean they're going to be violent. Most people want to do the right thing, even if they don't know what that right thing is. Even a psychopath can work out what's right and what's wrong, even if it's not by impulse. But still, if you think that somebody you work with or somebody that you're involved with in some way may very well be a psychopath, you might want to keep your guard up just a little bit. So what do you think? Do you know anybody in your life that could be defined as a psychopath? Have you had any experiences with someone who fits the relevant criteria? Have you got any interest in stories to share? Reach out with an Instagram DM or email us at deadsoulspodcast@gmail.com. If you are listening on YouTube, leave us a comment below. Okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you found this mini episode interesting. We have a Patreon where we release extra episodes, blogs, and research articles. It's also where we release the episodes that we aren't able to upload on regular podcast platforms or on YouTube, as they tend to get taken down and censored. Our Patreon costs just $2 a month, which gives you access to all of our extra content. It's a hell of a great deal and cheaper than a cup of coffee. It also supports us and our work, which we are hugely grateful for. Head over to www.patreon.com/deadsouls and join us. We have more episodes drop in this week, including a new series that we have been working on for quite a while. With that, thank you for joining us tonight. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.